Perhaps the professor could use your computer. Please.
Computer? Computer? Ah. Hello, computer.
Just use the keyboard.
The keyboard. How quaint.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bob and
To Be Determined
Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and...
Insert name here.
Technology is like living with the eyes of a shark. A shark's eyes have no life in them. And the way technology is advancing today, every day there's a new product. Every day the prices go up. And guess what?
What?
In 3 weeks' time, maybe 2 days, maybe a year, maybe a half a year, technology is going to be developed so strict and so refined that it will be able to kill your mother.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bob and...
Insert name here.
...show.
Hey, how you doing? It's the Bubble Genius Bob and Show. In case you're just joining us, Elvis is not on the show anymore. Elvis Dingledean is off the show. And so this would be the sort of the second week that we've done the show. No, this would be the third week we've done the show without Elvis. How time flies. And of course, the sound there at the top of the show. Scotty from Star Trek trying to operate a Mac. And then Gary Busey enlightening us with his views on technology. All references to the fact that the blog was offline for about, I don't know, about 100 hours. Yesterday and into this morning, I was up all night dealing with the blog and trying to get the database reloaded and all this horrific technological crap that frightens and confuses me. I know very little about it. So a lot of what my involvement specifically was contacting tech support and saying, what's going on? Help! Help! Just screaming bloody murder at tech support to try like hell. See, what I had to do, something went haywire. It was like almost like World War I. Because it started with something small where the menus on the blog just stopped functioning. And evidently they haven't been functioning in weeks, and I just now noticed it. Ashby emails me and says, Bob, by the way, those menus hadn't been working in weeks. I said, it shows you how often I use my own blog. So I wanted to fix those menus, and then it just escalated into this mayhem where I'm backing up databases and reinstalling WordPress. Well, first I tried to update WordPress, and then everything went haywire. So I had to reinstall it, back up a database, and then figure out how to get my template back and all of that crap, and then had to restore the database so that all of the posts and comments and everything would show up again. And here I am sweating bullets all night long thinking that the blog, which I had posted on since 2004, all of those posts I was thinking are gone. Like I'm just panicking, thinking everything has been obliterated. But fortunately, I woke up after about an hour or two of sleep and saw that everything seemed to be working, so I frantically reinstalled the comment stuff and clicked a bunch of buttons that I don't understand and entered some strange code that I also don't understand, and so fortunately everything is working. But I'm hating technology today. So I'm fully expecting that that Skype is going to malfunction at some point throughout the course of today's show, maybe multiple times, as it sometimes is wont to do. But speaking of Skype, and speaking of the show, as you recall, a couple of weeks ago, we had Ches Pazienza in here to sit in as a guest co-host. Last week was TV's Bill Corbett. And this week, the very first woman to ever appear live on this show ever is on the show today. Guest co-host Shannon Moore. Welcome, Shannon.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Oh, God, you sound great.
The first ever?
The first ever. I realized that. This has been like a man only. It's been like a man show since we started it. So you're definitely the first woman.
Oh, God help us.
Although some
okay,
people...
well, I'll try to hold up my end of the bargain here, representing, you know, womankind.
All of womankind.
Yes, all of us. And I'll try not to quit halfway through.
That's right.
Because, you know, I'm from Alaska.
That's right. And everyone in Alaska quits. Is that the trend? Is that what people do up there? They just get starving.
If everyone in Alaska quit, there would be nobody here because you can't quit here. I mean, if you're mushing dogs or you're, you know, out in a boat or in an airplane or anything else, you can't quit. I mean, it's the one thing you don't do here. Even if you're going the wrong way, don't quit.
Right. So let's talk about this now. I mean, because that's the sort of your foray into national prominence was your really pitbullish coverage of Sarah Palin. You know, even prior to when she was
pitbullish,
sort of, yeah.
Are you calling me a bitch? I mean, what's going on here?
I'm calling you tenacious. Everyone knows you're tenacious.
Well, you know what? She went out on national stage, mm-hmm. and I had been covering her for a long time, and I couldn't believe that she would just get out on national TV and close the door on Alaska and then lie, as though no one here was going to say, "Really? That's just not true." And so. There were a lot of stories that I broke with the, you know, Keith Olbermann, Rachel Maddow, mm-hmm. Huffington Post. So many people were like, okay, give us the information and we'll get it out. And we did a lot of that.
So you were at least partially responsible for exposing the whole road to nowhere, the bridge to nowhere lie, right?
Well, the thing was that, you know, that is actually a bridge to somewhere. It's. Mm-hmm. I feel really bad for the people on the island there.
Yeah, I
honestly do. But the thing was that Sarah said, you know, I said thanks, but no thanks on the bridge to nowhere. Well, she took the federal money and then she spent it on something else. Mm-hmm. That's not. I mean, you may have said no to the bridge, but you didn't say no to the money. It's like if you send your kid, you know, to go get some food, and you're like, here's for lunch, and they spend it on, you know, ice cream and beer.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's like. Well, did you have lunch? You know, it's crazy. I said no to lunch. You know,
people don't know that, and it's not often spoken about that you know, Alaska gets quite a bit of federal money in relation to the amount of money it pays in taxes. I think it's what, $1.60 for every dollar?
At least. Sometimes it's $1.80. I think, you know, and that's been really difficult for me as a lifelong Alaskan. You know, we're only 51 years old, and not me personally. I'm much younger than the state, but you know, and when you're looking at like Massachusetts, it's had a couple hundred years of getting federal dollars towards their infrastructure, mm-hmm. and Alaska simply doesn't have very much infrastructure. And so when it comes to, you know, airline safety, yeah, it costs a lot of money to maintain airline safety here. Ted Stevens was a huge proponent of airline safety, and it was very ironic that both he and his wife died in separate plane crashes, but that's not uncommon here. I mean, we had a Congressman Begich, who was Senator Mark Begich's father, was killed in the airplane crash here. I mean, this just isn't, and it was his fourth airplane crash.
What's the issue with airplanes in Alaska? Is it the weather? Is it that they have to land on water quite a bit, or what? There's no roads leading from city to city. Is that it?
Right, it's like 75% of the towns here don't have a road.
Right.
Like, really. So when you start looking at, like, the infrastructure that Alaska still really needs, because it is still really new, and we have these things called, you know, roads to resources. So basically the state and the federal government build all these roads for corporations to be able to go in and make money by extracting whatever they're pulling out of the ground.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I should back up here a second and also plug what you do, which is maybe like a dozen different shows. You do, how many different shows do you do, Shannon?
Well, I have my own radio show for 3 hours every day, mm-hmm. and then I have a television show, and I'm a columnist for the Anchorage Daily News, and I write for the mudflats.net, and I'm an editor there, and I've written for Huffington in the past, and like yourself, didn't get paid for it. And like everybody else over there. And so I don't know. I got a few irons in the fire, and I have a lot of things about this state that I really, really care about, and haven't left Alaska to go do other things, as tempting as it has been on occasion. this is a really wonderful place, and I want to try to write it.
And you're a native of Alaska. I mean, you've lived there your entire life.
I was born here. I think I was the New Year's baby, and I was born in the middle of June. That's how small my town was. They're wow. like, we've got the New Year's baby.
And June. Well, I mean, what town are you in now? Are you in?
I'm in Anchorage now.
Anchorage, okay.
But I grew up about 220 miles south of here on Kachemak Bay in a little town called Homer, which is a nuclear free zone. Which is, I mean, they have no box stores there. It's a really brave, wonderful little town of artists and hippies, and you know,
and
only
accessible by airplane.
Actually, you can get there by road, and there's airplanes there where I grew up. There is now a road, yeah.
So when you first started covering Sarah Palin, I mean, what was sort of what started that? I mean, what was it about her that really pissed you off enough to really start dogging her?
Well, it's hilarious because I started covering her because she was, you know, running for governor. And which seems like the perfect time to cover somebody. It wasn't like I just went out and drove around Wasilla and saw her and thought, ooh, what a weird bump it. I got to fix that. you know, but she was running for office, and she was running for office at a time where we had 10% of our legislature indicted for taking bribes from oil companies. They were all Republicans, by the way. Ted Stevens was under indictment. And it felt like the wheels were kind of coming off the Republican bus here. And she actually went after the Republicans. You know, she ran against an incumbent, beat him badly.
Yeah.
Who was Lisa Murkowski's father. And like the charisma of like -7. I mean, remarkably horrible, and not very popular at all. In fact, he doesn't even live here anymore. He lives in Utah. But so it was sort of the perfect storm. And people were like, well, you know, she's kind of shiny. Let's go with that. And I wasn't devastated when she was elected. I thought, well, we'll see how this goes. And there was actually some legislation that she passed with the help, well, she worked with a lot of Democrats, and that I still support. But that was when it was good for Alaska. And I don't know what she's off doing now, making money and running for something.
Going to those early years of Sarah Palin's political career, well, let's say at around the time you started covering her, what the hell happened to her? I mean, I actually saw a debate, like maybe it was a primary debate when she was running for governor. And she actually sounded somewhat articulate. I mean, she certainly didn't sound like the word salad doof that she is now. Do you see that as sort of a calculation that she has since sort of taken on this this sort of ridiculous marble mouth tone? Or is she so egomaniacal that she doesn't care to be advised by people? And so she lets herself go and rant, whereas maybe when she was running for governor, she was humble enough to take advice from people and to polish her appearance or her spoken, you know, her delivery and her talking points. I mean, what happened there?
She didn't even have that accent. You know, I mean, seriously, I mean, I interviewed her multiple times, and she wasn't afraid to talk to anybody or to come on and talk to me about things. She and I really got into it one day on the air, and I was really upset with her and told her so. And she said, oh, well, you know, I'm not very PC. And that was like her entire reason. I was like, what do you say? You know, what do you do? And obviously I haven't interviewed her in a long time, and she threatened to sue me on the 4th of July, the day after she quit her office. So, you know, it's kind of crazy when looking back at it and where, you know, just a girl from Wasilla has gone.
Yeah. I mean, and going to that lawsuit, what happened with that? What's going on with that at this point?
She quit. She quit halfway through the lawsuit. Of course she did. She didn't want to be deposed about her character.
You know? That's great.
That's what she came out. And I'd been on television with David Schuster, who I think is hilarious. He and I were on there, and it was the day she had quit. And I said, you know, there's all kinds of rumors going on up here because nobody can make sense of the fact that she just quit. Well, of course there are going to be rumors of all kinds of things. But, you know, like I said, we just had 10% of our legislature indicted. And so people were wondering if she wasn't part of that whole crew.
Yeah.
Well, And I mentioned this, and then she like comes after me, names me in a 4-page memo sent out to thousands of people in the press. And I actually had a press conference the next day in front of her office. Mm-hmm. And I was stunned that people showed up. But I was just like, I'm not going to be on the 4th of July told by Sarah Palin about my First Amendment rights. She can suck it. So I went out there and I actually said that. I was like, if you don't like it, suck it up, Buttercup.
Yeah.
And that's now on bumper stickers here. Suck it up, Buttercup.
Well, as I'm sure you're aware, she has no concept whatsoever of what the First Amendment means. I mean, she has routinely botched it. She has no clue. I mean, when she went after Dr. Laura, she said, you know, the listeners who were petitioning Clear Channel, whoever it was who syndicated Dr. Laura, to drop her were violating Dr. Laura's First Amendment rights. Well, of course, as we all know. That's, you know, First Amendment protects us, protects speech from Congress, from government, not from other people.
Well, that's what I said in my press conference. I said the First Amendment protects me from her, not her from me.
That's right.
And you know, really, I mean, the First Amendment is it can be tearing sometimes because, you know, when you see, you know, the God hates fags, Fred Phelps and everybody else, and you see them protesting at funerals and you feel bad for their families. And then, you know, this goes to the Supreme Court and you're like, wow, now this guy's lost his son and now he has to pay the bills, you know, legal bills for Fred Phelps. Like, that's insult to injury. But the truth of it is that man sadly lost his son in a war, and the whole point of the military is to protect us, supposedly, in our Constitution. We can argue about what the war was really about and if his son was really doing that. But, you know, what else are you fighting for?
That's right.
Other than for people to stand up and say things you don't like. I mean, the First Amendment doesn't apply to, like, puppies have funny smelling breath and daisies make me sneeze. Who cares? Mm-hmm. It's when I say something or you say something or any of us do that other people don't like. And that is what makes this country exceptional, if you want to talk about exceptionalism. It's not the fact that we have the royal fork.
Right. Today, also, she also screwed up another part of the Constitution. It's not surprising. She was talking about Mitch McConnell's plan for allowing the president to just go ahead and raise the debt ceiling himself. And Sarah Palin on Fox News Channel. I mean, I think I have the audio here, but I'm not going to risk trying to. Because audio never works on this show.
And nobody wants to hear her voice anyway. So
that's
you can
right.
just paraphrase. It'll be much sweeter.
We will not hand over more power, which I think is unconstitutional, to President Obama to further manipulate our economy. You know, Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution spells out that Congress has the power of the purse strings. So this plan of McConnell's, I think, makes no sense because it does cede power to our president and takes away that authority that is inherent in Congress. I'm running out of breath. To control the economic decisions that have to be made when it comes to the debt. That's what she said.
Okay.
So she says.
Okay.
She,
first of all, Sarah Palin thinks the debt ceiling is something that you have to repaint on occasion.
Right.
You know, honestly, Bob, that is she doesn't get this stuff. She does not. When she was here, I mean, you can look through emails that she had. I have so many friends that have worked with her and they're like, she just didn't get it. She didn't understand.
Yeah.
I mean, when she was running, anybody that was like an advisor for her is like, yeah, she thought Africa was a country, not a continent. I mean, she doesn't. And then she puts this stuff out and it's and in the word salad that she does express. And I can tell you, a good friend of mine, Jeannie Devon, who runs the mudflats.net, she has for years been transcribing Sarah's speeches. Like we'd go and, you know, be at one of Sarah's speeches and we'd tape it and she would sit there and transcribe it. I'm like, do you never ever have to use punctuation? Like, like, you know, with this few periods, you're going to have children. This is insane. I just
right.
like, it's nuts.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. And the fact that she's coming out there, it's like, this is actually a pretty serious thing. You know, talking about the debt ceiling, and mm-hmm. when you look back and you see what happened in 1979 when we had 79 Republicans basically put us into this position for one day. And in one day's time, we lost money because, of course, you know, the percentage went up. that we were owing on debt by, I think it was 0.5%, you know, for one day. And there, and it cost us a lot of money, you know, but this was the same crew that was trying to, they were doing it for political reasons to get Ronald Reagan elected,
yeah,
and to stress everybody out and to make Jimmy Carter look like crap. And I mean, it wasn't just the debt ceiling. They were also making sure that Iran would keep the hostages longer. I mean, what they're willing to go to win is actually, I think, has been treasonous. And I it's crazy to watch people act like, you know, that this is just some flutterby thing. It's actually really serious.
That's the whole thing. It is treasonous. And I've been kind of ranting on the blog about this and wondering, why aren't there investigations? I mean, at some point we have to take a serious look at what the Republicans are doing and what's at stake. And I mean, even if you look at the House Majority Leader, Eric Cantor, I have a whole other rant about. But I mean, one of the things he's doing, I mean, he's basically betting against the American economy by short selling T-bills. And yet he's in the negotiation room. I mean, he's being ostracized now, which is good, I guess. But he still has a say in what's, I mean, this should not be allowed to pass. And I think the media is, of course, it is like, this is old territory. I mean, to say the media is miscovering something is like saying the sky is blue. But what they're doing is they're covering the horse race of it, predictably enough, instead of what they ought to be covering, which is how ridiculously illegal this should be, on top of how myopic the Republicans are in terms of just not even remembering what they did 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
I mean, right, much less last week. And you're totally right. And do you know Cliff Schechter?
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a brilliant piece for Al Jazeera English called "Yes, I'll Dare Call It Treason," and he lays this out in a remarkable way. And I think, you know, in looking at, you know, the news media and the info news or whatever you want to call it that's out there, they've really done something. I think that maybe it's just about ratings, because I don't think we have right wing or lamestream or whatever media. I think it's all corporate. And, you know, maybe they watched who Sally, Jesse, Raphael and all of these shows, Jerry Springer, and were like, hey, that's really what people want to see, you know, and they've turned the news into this reality show. And frankly, I think this, whoever eats the most bugs should be allowed to set the debt ceiling.
Yeah.
You know, just let's just make it Survivor, or let's start voting people off the island, because it's, you know, the tribe has spoken, Eric Cantor. Sit down and shut up. Well, he did. He sat down and shut up today. And, you know, obviously his dad didn't say, you know, it's better for you to keep your mouth shut and have people think you're stupid than open your mouth and prove it.
Yeah. I mean, it's very literally about the Republicans holding a gun to the heads of every single American citizen. I mean, and you can go beyond that, because, you know, the American economy goes, so goes the world economy.
And right. But all of it, and I mean, it's so sinister that it's all about winning the White House. It's, you know, President Barack Obama, I don't agree with everything. You don't either.
Right.
But I wasn't looking for a date or a boyfriend. I wanted a president. And I've got one, and I don't agree with everything, but I'm not in a place to just like break up. Right.
Yeah.
Well, he's going to be fine. His kids are going to whatever school they want to go to. They're going to have all the money they need. They're going to have health care. They're going to be fine. This Republican Party is never going to be able to take that away from him. But in the process of trying to take away the presidency, they are taking away all of those things from lots and lots of people. Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised that more Americans aren't looking at this and just being like, wow, that's treason.
That's right. Because there's no greater illustration of something that's quite obvious about the Republican Party to you and I, but might not be so obvious to to just casual observers, is that the Republican Party ceased to be about policy. At some point in the last 30, 40 years, they became entirely about marketing. What sells? What gets them votes? What gets them cash for their campaigns? And none of it has to do with policy. Policy is irrelevant now. And all you have to do is look at their ideas and see how shallow and ridiculous and untenable they are. And it's quite obvious. You see it right now happening with the debt ceiling. There is nothing logical whatsoever about what they're doing right now. Not a single proposal that they've put on the table in terms of what they're suggesting with regards to the debt and the deficit. None of it. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, all you have to do, you look at the,
well, they did it with health care. They've done it. I mean, you had people talking about death panels and you're like, really? You already have a death panel. It's called your insurance company.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah,
United Health Group CEO made $126 million himself personally in 1 year. And people are like, I don't want the government killing grandma. Well, where do you think those dollars came from? It came from them saying no.
Yeah.
And when I was talking to a friend of mine who's a doctor about just that whole thing. And he said, I don't like arguing with an insurance company. I spent more years in college and university and med school than they make dollars an hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To tell me that I'm wrong about a patient. This is insane. But yeah, I don't know. I think there's a certain percentage of people that, you know, if they found out that Ronald Reagan had like baby heart for breakfast every morning, they would be like, well, he needed to keep his iron up to fight the liberals. You know, it wouldn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot easier to sell a phrase like death panel, sell a phrase like spending spree, than it is to get into the complexities of the national debt, which is, you know, another reason why I think it behooves the Republicans to slash and burn the hell out of education. But I mean, I kind of want to read this on the show. This is, I found Cliff Schechter's piece here from Al Jazeera. And I think it's important to get this out there. If you go and check it out. He says, once upon a time, and Cliff would be much better at reading this, but in lieu of him, I'll do it. Once upon a time in a land that now seems to have been populated by tooth fairies and unicorns, there was a political party that had set a core of beliefs to which they actually adhered. Among them that actually balanced the budget, as opposed to just talking about it, was sacrosanct. Now change, while necessary, had to be balanced against the traditions of the United States, ones that had mostly served us well over two centuries. Foreign military adventures should be limited to our national security interests. And one of the single most important components of diplomacy was protecting the economic interests not only of an elite few, but of the great many Americans who toiled in our factories and fields. This party was known as the Republican Party. And while one might have disagreed with them on their policy prescriptions to cure any particular U.S. ill, one could at least see some logic in their beliefs and understand that they, with some obvious exceptions from time to time, ahem, Joseph McCarthy, ahem, were doing what they thought was right for the United States of America. Today, this once respectable organization has turned into nothing so much as a collective id the size of a David Vitter Pampers shopping spree. When facing changes to this nation that make them uncomfortable, they choose national hate. When facing ideological worship versus the greatness of the United States, the former always wins the day. When facing a choice of what is good for the U.S. or their personal bank accounts, they inevitably go with the latter every single time. And it goes on and on. If you Google Cliff Schechter and yes, I dare call it treason, you can check it out. I think it's on Al Jazeera. It's also copied on Op-Ed News. But it makes this point that Shannon, they no longer care about policy. And I mentioned spending spree before. The crazy caucus was in front of a microphone yesterday. I'm talking specifically of Steve King, Michelle Bachmann, and Louis Gohmert.
There's a name.
Yeah.
I know.
I love that because it's also a name and it's also an adjective. Ah, he's such a Gohmert.
Totally. The best line in Phil's piece was, we the people of the United States are the maid. The GOP is Arnold Schwarzenegger. Any questions? You know? And I just, you know, I was raised by wolves. I mean, Republicans. And I can totally see where their ideology and everything came from. I don't but that was then, and things have changed, and it is a very serious thing to question someone's patriotism. I know, you know, protesting the wars and having people say, "Why do you hate America?" I'm just like, "Why are you stupid?" Because you guys have been cutting education for so long. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like, how can you care about this country and do the things that the GOP are doing? And I really look at them now as an extension of the Chamber of Commerce, and they're looking for the United Corporations of America.
That's right. Well, here's what the crazy caucus were doing. They were standing up in front of microphones yesterday, and they said, among other things, President Obama is holding the full faith and credit of the United States hostage so he can continue his spending spree. Spending spree. This is... President Obama is on a spending spree, even though the reality, which we all understand and we all recognize as being mathematical, empirical fact, is that the federal budget deficit has actually gone down from Bush's final budget to the president's first budget. It went down by $122 billion. And it's a big deficit, and $122 billion might not amount to much relative to the total amount of the deficit. But it's still something. And then if you look at the debt, if you look at the national debt, and you take a look at the components that form the national debt, I mean, it's not hard to see right in front of you in mathematical terms, illustrated in a beautiful, colorful graph compiled by CBPP, what composes that debt. And what is, over the next 10 years, what is it made up of? Well, you know, first of all, the Bush era tax cuts. That's the biggest part. Then wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. That's the next biggest part. Then you have the economic downturn. That's the next biggest part. There's a little tiny sliver for TARP, Fannie, and Freddie. And then at the very bottom is the Recovery Act. Small section. The Recovery Act.
You know, maybe if we were deficit spending for education and healthcare, people would understand this stuff better.
That's right. But then you have, well, we get to talk about Bubble Genius here in a second, but I want to talk about that specifically because Eric Cantor, who's a regular whipping boy on this show, he's done something this week that just thoroughly, thoroughly pissed me off. And it has to do with education. Shannon, I'm sure you're familiar with Bubble Genius and how incredible their soap is. You were talking about your favorite soap before the show?
Coconut pie. I love coconut pie.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of the hibiscus soap, and I'm hoping they will actually start marketing the hibiscus soap again. I don't think they sell it right now. It's my favorite soap they have. They don't sell it. I hope they will, because it is the best. It's easily the best hand soap I've ever used. I mean, as far as a bar of soap goes... Best soap in the world. And all of their soap products are fantastic. They have also bath and body products, everything from you to your dog. I mean, they have soaps for your dog. Coolest soap and body care stuff you've ever, ever seen. Hilarious, all-natural, eco-friendly products, bath, body, mental well-being. That's bubblegenius.com. And here now is their latest commercial from Bubble Genius.
Hey, I see you've got a bag from my favorite makers of bath and body stuff, Bubble Genius. What's in the bag?
Oh, wouldn't you like to know?
Yeah, I would. I love their silly soaps.
Gee, you sound pretty Amsterdam excited to see what bubbly treat I've got.
Well, yeah. So, what'd you get?
I'm trying to tell you if you just pay attention. Okay, I'll give you one last hint. Dutch shoe!
Bless you? Hey, why won't you tell me what Bubble Genius soap is in the bag?
I guess I've really got to spell it out for you. I got the Dutch treat wooden shoe soap. All vegetable-based, of course, and smelling like delicious sunshine.
Oh, cool! So, a clog you'd actually want going down your drain!
Those Bubble Geniuses sure are Bubble Geniuses.
BubbleGenius.com! Awesome.
Awesome. Shove Bob and
to be determined
into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go.
Yep.
Subscribe to the Bob and
insert name here
show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Enter your promo code when you go to bubblegenius.com and buy your stuff. Enter the promo code AWESOME, AWESOME, and get 15% off your entire order from bubblegenius.com. And as we determined last week, that those bubbles, I kind of figured out what the bubbles at the beginning and end of the commercial are. They're not soap bubbles. Let's just put it that way. This is bong. Bong.
You know what, Bob? Yeah. I met them. I met the girls from Bubble Genius at Netroots Nation. They're fabulous. And I have a really, really fun picture of us in the photo booth. We all three crammed into a photo booth. And they smelled like heaven because, you know, they're clean.
That's right. I imagine them just being impeccably clean. And in fact, we met them out here. They came out here for a personal event, we met them for dinner, and they smelled lovely. I mean, how can you not? I mean, they've got the best soap, and so they I'm sure they just have like their pick of whatever soaps they want. They, you know, they get like the Lawn Gnome soap and use that, and that gives them a nice fresh sort of Irish countryside smell. What is it? Scottish? I think it's Scottish. I think Lawn Gnomes are Scottish anyway. And so they do smell invariably sweet smelling. So good. But anyway, so back to Eric Cantor. We were talking about Eric Cantor before, or I wanted to bring up something about Eric Cantor with regards to education. It came out this week that as part of one of his brilliant ideas for protecting tax cuts for the super rich was, of course, to do this. As Monday's White House budget talks got down to the nitty-gritty, Eric Cantor proposed a series of spending cuts, one of them aimed squarely at college students. The House Majority Leader, who did most of the talking for the Republican side, not anymore, said those taking out student loans should start paying interest right away rather than being able to defer payments until after graduation. It's a big-ticket item that would save $40 billion over 10 years. So, again, another Republican attack against education. They're doing it at the state level. They're doing it at the federal level. Well, I mean, let's face it. They're doing it to every program they hate. They're just defunding it. They're just trying to destroy it. And with education, it actually directly benefits them because, well, let's face it, the dumber people are, the more often they vote for Republicans. So it stands to reason that they would attack education. But I mean, this is kind of ridiculous. Logically, it only makes sense coming from Eric Cantor, because this is the guy who tried to pass a bill which would then automatically become law. And then that law would then make a completely separate bill also become law. This is Eric Cantor. And he also legislates videos by James O'Keefe and Andrew Breitbart. Makes bills based on their videos. He's a smart guy.
Yeah, why does he hate America? I'm just going to start asking that question now when people are doing things that obviously hurt us. I think that's really ludicrous. And my understanding is that, you know, when I'm watching all of these different laws and different bills come out, and they're God knows what think tank they really got, you know, in some petri dish that were juiced up back in the day, and they're coming out now. But I look at it, I'm like, how do they even get it? Like the people there, or do they have that are put like Eric Cantor? Like, does he not realize the idiocy of this at all? Like that would actually hurt students, and that maybe people would be less likely to go to university if they didn't have the time to find the job. And oh, by the way, there aren't as many jobs now, and there are more qualified people, so it's even more difficult. Like, is he? And then people are going to be defaulting even faster than they already are. Yeah. I mean, there's no long range. And like, how would this affect people in the long run in this country? Because that's actually the job of legislating.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Is to
right.
take those into consideration.
Well, and you know, there's no better stimulus than education. I mean, and it doesn't take a genius to understand that. You know, if you have people who have received a college education and who aren't leaving that college education deeply in debt, then that actually has a stimulative effect on the economy because those people can more easily work, which means they can more easily contribute to the GDP, and they can more easily pay their taxes. And, you know, the deficit is resolved because you have increased revenue. The economy is boosted. I mean, there's so many different positive. Plus, we become competitive because we're our more educated Americans contributing to research and development and new technologies. I mean,
it's also a family value.
Yeah.
It is also, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that unemployment and not making a living wage is really, really difficult on families. And when people lose their jobs or lose their health insurance, it's oftentimes that they also change their marriage status on Facebook. I mean, it's so difficult. And so that's, you know, for a party that talks about family values, all they're really talking about is making sure that queer people can't be, you know, families when it comes, you know, to what their paperwork says, and that the fetuses are, you know, are sacrosanct. It's like, that's to me, family values. How can you possibly say that you're, you know, anti-union and have family values? Mm-hmm. Because right. A living wage has a lot to do with, you know, the value of your life and your family.
Yeah. I mean, what was better for families? What we're experiencing now as a consequence of Reaganomics or what American families were like, the real rise of the American middle class post-war, when, you know, you could work 40 hours a week, you could have a vacation, you could send your kids to college, you could have a house that you could call your own that wasn't under threat of being foreclosed, you could own a car, and you could retire with a pension, you know, send your kids to college. I mean, this is what we have lost here as a result of trickle down, as a result of tax cuts for the super rich at the expense of things like college education, for God's sake, at the expense of things like health care and sending jobs overseas. I mean, I don't understand how any of that contributes to a stronger family. And I'm so glad you brought that up. It's such a good point, you know, because it actually, you could apply that same point to just about every bit of Republican, what they like to call policy, what I'll call marketing, they call policy. And so the family values, the anti-family values argument goes to all of that. I mean, even their anti-abortion position is anti-family. I mean, it's kind of a universal criticism that they're just routinely hypocritical on all of these things from a simple family values point of view.
Well, and I look at it too, and I think they've become even more extreme because I can't imagine what, you know, even, well, I live in a state that under Republican rule in 1970 decriminalized abortion before Roe v. Wade.
Yeah.
I know there's the big Alaska myth. You know, we actually used to be very progressive before oil and, you know, the Texans and Oklahomans came in. But in that whole loop of what's happening now they're like redefining rape or saying that, yeah, if you're 13 and a victim of incest and rape, you should have to have the baby. Mm-hmm. Like, really? Now, if somebody said, look, this happened to my child and she's going to keep the baby, I'd be like, okay, do you guys need anything? Because I got, you know, a box of diapers in my garage that I'm happy to give you. Or, you know, I wouldn't be like, are you out of your mind? Kill that fetus, you know? Jesus, that would be insane. But I wouldn't want the government making those decisions. And I can't imagine even 15 years ago that the Republicans were making these arguments. I think they've gone too far because I don't, as conservative and as pro-life as some of my friends are, and by friends, I mean my dad, with little, he's got the little tie tack with the fetus feet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He thinks it's insane to actually block, you know, legal abortions for, you know, 13-year-olds who have been raped and impregnated. Like, right. Even, like, okay, he doesn't think you should have a punch card. I get that. But they've gone, and now they're trying to legalize that. It's just, it's pretty strange, and I keep thinking there's going to be some sort of moment. And, Bob, I don't know. You may feel the same way. I'm waiting for whatever it's going to take for people to be like, all right, I'm pulling this car over and I'm getting the torch and pitchfork out of the trunk and we're going.
Yeah.
It's go time. I mean, I don't know what it would take. And I think it's going to take different things for different people, but the economy certainly affects everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, going back to abortion momentarily and how it relates to family values, I mean, what is more pro-family than, for example, providing full and universal health benefits for pregnant woman? Universal health benefit. What is so anti-family about that? But instead, what they're doing is forcing married women who predominantly are the ones. Well, see, you have a family. You have, a family of four. The mother, they become pregnant again. They can't afford it in this economy. Dad's out of work. Mom's out of work. They're being foreclosed on. All of these nightmarish scenarios that are part and parcel of the recession are landing on their heads. What happens? They can't afford to. They can't possibly afford without health care to have another child. So this is their only option. But then, say, under a Republican universe, they're forced to have that child. How is that going to hold their family together? How is that going to benefit their family? It's unbelievable to me that they would possibly say to these to women, regardless of what their status is, that you have to have this child and we're not going to help you whatsoever. You're just on your own. Screw you. We don't care.
Well, that was part of the thing when, you know, Sarah Palin came out and said she was pregnant and, you know, she was obviously in her 40s and people were talking about that and people didn't know that the baby was Down syndrome until after, you know, it was born. But I was like, well, you know what? The fact that she's got insurance, she has a family, she has a support group, all of these things put her in a position that she can make that decision and it's a responsible decision for her family, you know. Regardless of what we've seen of her dragging him around the countryside. But at the same time that I was saying that, I got an email from a listener who said, look, I've got my last kid just hit college. My husband has left me, but he just left me 6 weeks ago. I didn't know he was on the way out the door. And I'm pregnant and I'm 44 years old. And she was just like, you know, he was leaving her, divorcing her. She wasn't going to have insurance. She hasn't worked outside of her house. She made a different decision, you know, and realizing that, you know, you can't determine all those things for people. I mean, what would that have done to the, you know, her kids at school? I don't know. It just seems like, you know, I remember my pop telling me when I was a kid, I was kind of making fun of somebody at school. And he said, you know, you don't live at their house.
Yeah.
And my dad was the principal, so he knew a lot of stuff going on that he didn't say. But it was, you know, you cannot imagine that the government is in a position to determine those sort of things for your family.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the easiest thing in that particular situation, at least to have access to universal health care, to at least have access to be able to say, you know what, if I decide to keep this child, you know what? I won't have to go broke in the process of doing it because the Republicans are forcing me to keep the child. I don't have any money to do it. What do I do? What are the options here?
Well, you know, there was a time where I was actually listening to Bobby Kennedy's speech when he was announcing that Martin Luther King had been killed. Mm-hmm. And in Indianapolis to a crowd and letting them know that he'd been killed. And he was asked not to do it. He was told by the police there that, you know, they couldn't make sure that he was safe by him going and speaking to this crowd who was largely African-American. And I was listening to that speech, and I think it's one of the most brilliant speeches I've ever heard in this country because it wasn't written for him or he was off the cuff and it was really raw. But it really struck me at one point that I was listening to that, you know, this country went through this really serious trauma over a 5-year period with President Kennedy being killed, Martin Luther King killed, Bobby Kennedy killed, Malcolm X was killed. And I got this sense that why the hell wouldn't people dial out? Everybody that was alive during that time basically can tell you where they were at and all of these, you know, the things, you know, the teacher was crying at school or, you know all the stories.
Yeah.
And I thought, holy crap, we as a country just went into this protective mode, like, you know what? Bring on the Brady Bunch. I want to know more about Starsky and Hutch than anything else. And in seeing the violence of that, people being slaughtered, your leaders, people that you trusted and cared about and had your hopes and dreams wrapped around. And it is no wonder that pretty much a huge amount of the culture that had, you know, were protesting, doing all kinds of things, just went underground.
Yeah.
And just said, you know what, I'm not going to do this. And I don't fault people. I mean, I hear people a lot of times say, well, the American people deserve the government they get and this sort of thing. And I'm like, you know, I kind of understand it's not okay, but I understand why people went away. And I left, and all of this was on the station, you know, on my radio show. And I came out to leave that day, and there was a man standing there, and long white beard, long white hair, had on this hat, a VA hat. And he was standing near my car, and he saluted me. And because I thought, well, this is going to go a couple of ways, you know. And he said, and he had tears in his eyes, and he said, I'm reporting back for duty. He said, I was one of those people that unplugged.
Wow.
And there, I think there, in order to get us involved again as a nation, we really have to encourage people and remind them that, look, there are good and painful reasons that people collectively unplugged, but it's the worst thing that any of those people that gave up their lives fighting for social justice would want. You know?
Yeah, and yeah, I'm really beginning to see people connecting back in. I mean, I think
right.
Certainly, watching the 2008 election transpire, there was increased participation there. More people donating, you know, a dollar here, $2 there, and I think just the force of the recession, just the ultimate nightmare that this recession has been, has coaxed some people back into the game. But I do wish the media would actually reflect a little bit more of that and kind of adjust accordingly, where people are observing more finer points and they want to hear more finer points. The media is still stuck behind the curve where they're covering news as if no one's really paying attention. They're covering.
Well, it doesn't sell for them. I mean, look what has been happening in Wisconsin, which I am completely addicted to this whole, I mean, I've had so many people on from Wisconsin on my Alaska radio show because I know that what's happening there is coming to a state near me, and it might actually be mine since basically there's no other state near me, just another country. And the media doesn't cover that. I mean, the mainstream, you know, corporate media is not interested in, you know, people taking over a Capitol. But I'll tell you what got attention was people having their beer running out in Minnesota, you know, like, oh my, or is Michigan. They're like, yeah. Oh, Judas Priest, we got to pull our heads out and get this budget under control. Cause if these people don't have beer, we're going to have a riot on our hands.
Exactly.
It was great. It was classic. It couldn't possibly be healthcare payments.
Yeah. Or watching the value of their house go down by $100,000.
Right. Or that I don't have a fire department right now. Whatever it was, they're just like, hey, beer, people will freak. And I thought, well, that's where you get them.
Yeah. And the viewing public, the consumer public, the consuming of news, they want to hear more of these things now. And the press is still covering the horse race. They're still covering, you know, just the sort of instead of, for example, they're actually heralding Rick Perry as being this Republican savior. Like he could swoop in and get the nomination. He could actually be this silver bullet that covers both the Tea Party wing and the centrists and all of that. But they report that because that's great to talk about. But what they don't report is something valuable for viewers to sink their teeth into, which is the fact that he used a lot of accounting tricks to reduce that deficit. He actually took a gigantic chunk of stimulus money to meet his obligations there in Texas. And on top of the fact that from 2001 to 2010, the state debt grew from $13 billion to $37 billion. I mean, that's an increase of 281%. We don't know this stuff.
Not to mention, we just barely don't have pictures of him with, like, crosses on fire.
Right.
You know, it's like, they may be. I'm not saying there's pictures of him with burning crosses. I'm just saying somebody may have some.
Yeah.
Because his whole secessionist thing, you know, that was a big thing here. We had this, we still do. We have a huge secessionist movement here. And when I say huge, it's not like 50% or anything, but they actually are on the ballot. And we actually had they're called the Alaska Independence Party. We actually had a governor elected from the Alaska Independence Party. And we've got Norm Olson up here, who, if you remember him, he was like the head of the Michigan militia and mm-hmm. Timothy McVeigh's mentor. Okay, well, the Michigan militia decided that he was too radical and ran him off, so he moved here. He ran for lieutenant governor last year. Okay, so
oh my God.
Secessionists, it is, and you know, this, we have a guy named Schaefer Cox who, he's in jail now. I know Schaefer Cox. No wonder the guy's so violent with that name. He was named after Francis Schaefer. I know. So Schaefer Cox. It sounds like something you need ointment for. But he just had this big plan that was foiled to kill judges and troopers here, right? Okay, these are the guys standing up to saying, you know, we need to be our own country. That's a serious thing. Mm-hmm. Todd Palin was part of that group. Sarah Palin gave a speech to them at their convention. Secessionists.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I think we had a big war about that.
Exactly. And it didn't turn out very well for the 600,000 people who were killed in that war.
And right. Or the people that lost everything afterwards.
Certainly. Yeah. You know? Certainly didn't work out very well for the South. I mean, the South was decimated for years and years and years where it was just nothing but.
I don't think they're okay yet.
No.
And in some places, I'll tell you, I had family fight on both sides of that war. And my mother is from a wonderful place in Virginia, and she was at my, and she still has this wonderful Southern accent. Oh my God, it's just dreamy. And when she says "bless your heart," that's not what she means. You know, she's like one of those Southern ladies. Uh-huh. And we were listening, and this was, I don't know, a few years back, obviously, but George Bush was on. He was like, "Well, America's never lost the war," and my mother snaps her head around. She says, "I beg his pardon. The South lost the war."
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, Mom, all right, are you bitter? What's going on here?
Yeah.
Do you want me to get your little Dixieland flag blankie out for you?
They're still hurting over that. I mean, it's still a big deal in the South. And I don't think the rest of us really get a full grasp of how sore it is.
No, but, well, and think of it, though. I mean, we do not have a lot of places in America where we have battlefields, right? Mm. Certainly in Hawaii. You've got Pearl Harbor there. People go there, and there's obviously a nod and a remembrance there that's there all the time for the people walking past it to go to work at, you know, Denny's or whatever.
Yeah.
In the South, it is covered with battlefields. Mm-hmm. You know, Appomattox is right. I mean, they're everywhere. And then they do the reenactments, which I find strange. I understand the whole, like, the history of the outfits and the hoop skirts, and maybe it's kind of romantic for that, but you know, you don't see people in Germany like, okay, let's do a reenactment now, you guys get on a line and get on that train.
Yeah
They're not doing that. You know why? Because you don't want to be the person in the line.
Exactly.
Nobody wants to go play Holocaust.
Well, here's my issue with the reenactment, Shannon. It gives off the wrong impression to people who maybe just don't know a whole lot about the history. Because if you don't know a whole lot about the Civil War and you go to a reenactment, you think the entire war was fought by 9 fat middle-aged guys versus another 9 fat middle-aged guys. And they just sort of ran at each other and shot their guns in the air and then went home and had beer. That's the extent of the Civil War for so many people who see a reenactment. And it's kind of sad. On that note, Bubble Genius, pure products, pure genius. Bubble Genius, the official sponsor of this year's show, the exclusive sponsor at www.bubblegenius.com. they are, speaking of soldiers, they are actually still, they're getting ready to send a big shipment out to the troops. If you go to bubblegenius.com, you can participate in Buy a Soldier a Shower. They're sending their packages out to troops in Afghanistan next week. So if you want to buy a soldier a shower, now's a great time to do it. Go to bubblegenius.com/causes/soldier-shower.html. And what you do is you contribute some money and, you buy some soap, and then Bubble Genius sends that that care package to a soldier in Afghanistan. It's a great idea, a great plan. And you should definitely, if you support the troops, you'll definitely want to participate and buy a soldier a shower at Bubble Genius. And here is their latest stoned commercial.
Hey, I see you've got a bag from my favorite makers of bath and body stuff, Bubble Genius. What's in the bag?
Oh, wouldn't you like to know?
Yeah, I would. I love their silly soaps.
Gee, you sound pretty Amsterdam excited to see what bubbly treat I've got.
Well, yeah. So, what'd you get?
I'm trying to tell you if you just pay attention. Okay, I'll give you one last hint. Dutch shoe!
Bless you? Hey, why won't you tell me what Bubble Genius soap is in the bag?
I guess I've really got to spell it out for you. I got the Dutch treat wooden shoe soap. All vegetable-based, of course, and smelling like delicious sunshine.
Oh, cool! So, a clog you'd actually want going down your drain!
Those bubble geniuses sure are bubble geniuses.
Bubblegenius.com! Awesome.
Shove Bob and
to be determined
into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and
insert name here
show in the podcast section on iTunes.
I'm going to miss that because starting next week will be the big announcement of the permanent new co-host of the show. It's pretty exciting. So next week on this show, I will introduce the permanent code, and you'll be able to know who it is. And this won't be a big announcement because the bumper at the top of the show will actually end up announcing the name of who it is. But that'll be next week, so that's kind of exciting. By the way, if you go to bubblegenius.com, enter the promo code AWESOME, AWESOME, and get 15% off your entire order from Bubble Genius. Real quick, Shannon, I want to talk about this. I know we're running out of time here, but I wanted to get to a couple of things.
Sure.
First of all, what's happening with the Pebble Mine?
Oh, well, let me tell you a couple of things.
That's a loaded question, but yeah.
It is. It's so curious. For people that don't know about the Pebble Mine, I mean, we're known for our toxic, former, half-witted, word salad-spinning governor. But there's actually worse things in Alaska than Sarah Palin. I know, it's hard to fathom. But cyanide doesn't have a shelf life. Sarah Palin does. And basically, the Pebble Mine is the largest, it's a proposal at this point for the largest open pit mine ever proposed in North America. And you can basically put all the other mines inside of it. And it's a cyanide mine. So they've got, 20 square miles of slurry. They've already said over 10 billion tons of waste will come out of it. Ugh. And we're trying to stop it right now. And the big, and I'm sure people are like, well, Alaska's big. You could probably hide it and no one will see it. Well, where they want to put it is at the headwaters of Bristol Bay. And Bristol Bay is the largest wild red salmon fishery in the world. We've got, 60 million fish returning with no hatcheries, no farms, no nothing, just, as Mother Nature intended. And so we're dealing with this mining conglomerate where we're dealing with Anglo-American and Northern Dynasty, and they're absolutely shameless in what they're trying to do to shove this thing through. And I've been working with several people. People can find out more about the whole project at savebristolbay.org is where we try to – that's a giant conglomeration of different people fighting this mine. But it's been really – interesting to watch this mining outfit operate, and
pretty much everywhere else that they've had an open pit mine, they've destroyed fisheries. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you wouldn't go get on an airplane if every other plane that they'd taken off had crashed, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is ludicrous that we would – not only is it a serious mine, but the location is just – you know, we've – over half of America's seafood comes out of Bristol Bay, Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also a food security issue, and we're trying right now to get the EPA and Lisa Jackson to invoke the 404C of the Clean Water Act and to be able to say, look, you can't put this in here, not in this location.
Yeah.
And we've been working on that. And there's lots of updates and things for people to, you know, show up and do. So, you know, ANWR was a big fight for, you know, over Alaska that a lot of Americans got involved in. And I think this one is actually more important.
Do you think this will be ANWR times 1,000, basically?
Yeah, if ANWR was producing over half the nation's seafood, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I mean, and ANWR was a good fight for its time, but, you know, and it's, you know, a lot of Alaskans are like, well, you know, how they explore has changed and you know, they could probably do this safely. Right now, I look at development for one thing, and that is if it has water involved. Mm-hmm. Because it totally changes. I was an Exxon plaintiff. I was a commercial fisherman half my life. I was a commercial fisherman. And I know that when you have water and you've got either oil or you've got mining sludge, you're in a whole different category of cleanup. And, you know, we've seen what corporations do. They can outlast you and they can take you to court. And it took 20 years for us to get a settlement here in Alaska after the Exxon Valdez. And I got 10 cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
So after 20 years, and Exxon never lost a dime. By the way, they don't have a marked building in Alaska, and there's a good reason for it.
Yeah, because if it was marked, it would be coated with eggs and varieties of other excrement.
Right. Or if I walked up to their building and dumped oil, yeah, you know, on their, you know, I dumped a gallon of oil on their front porch, I would get charged. But after what they did to Alaska, in fact, I did some work for the BBC last year and went out to Prince William Sound where I used to fish. And I went to land, walked across the beach, and I was just looking. I had my shovel. I was going to dig down and see if the oil was still there. I walk across the beach, I turn around, and my footprints all filled up with oil sheen.
Unbelievable.
I didn't even have to dig, and that was with full southern exposure for 21 years, and there's still the oil there. And, you know, my eyes filled up with tears about the same rate. It was really, it's really difficult, and so I don't want to see that happen again with Pebble Mine, and I definitely, we're all seeing it with BP. I mean, they're doing the same thing, stringing people along, and can Feinberg is, I wonder who's going to be the manager when he is actually considered a toxic waste and poison to the citizens of this country.
That's right. I wonder how much of that sheen, by the way, was sheen plus Corexit.
Oh, a considerable amount. They flew it out of unmarked C-130s at the time. And I can tell you this, the average life expectancy for an Exxon worker is 51. And I also, I sat down with some people who were also Exxon victims. Mm-hmm. And we put together a list of people we knew that had committed suicide because of the spill. In fact, the mayor of one of our towns, Cordova, listed Exxon in his suicide note and blew his own head off. And we did the math and we figured out that if the Gulf region, and it didn't happen the first year, it takes about 4 years, 4 or 5, 6, 7 years. And then the suicides really start coming. And if that happens in the Gulf, the same percentage of the population would be 45,000 suicides in the Gulf.
Good God. Yeah, I mean, it's never considered, whether it's Pebble Mine or whether it's the Exxon Valdez or the BP disaster in the Gulf, or even what's happening with the Fukushima power plant. No one's reporting on that, by the way, either.
Right, or Yellowstone.
Yellowstone. The externalized cost of this goes on for decades upon decades, where people are, you know, suddenly there are cases of cancer, there's suicides, there's all kinds of weird diseases that crop up, and
bankruptcies, divorces. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is never taken into consideration. This is always, you know, once we get to a certain point in a disaster like this, everyone stops reporting it, and no one really wants to look at it anymore. We're kind of sick of looking at the BP spill, or you know, and so what ends up happening is then we start to wonder 5 years down the line, once we've all forgotten about why, is a lot of people getting cancer in this one specific area right around here in Louisiana, you know, and then suddenly I wonder why that is. Oh, why are all these people getting cancer? And well, we'll start to know. Or why, you know, people are suddenly committing suicide in droves in the, you know, along the Gulf Coast.
Right. And, you know, we just saw, there was just a study out of West Virginia saying, you know, these people here are having higher rates of children with birth defects in these certain areas where we've done mountaintop removal. The mining company came out and said it's because of inbreeding. It's like, listen, we're a little past hee-haw, first of all. But there were, the drug abuse, the alcohol abuse goes up. And after that, the town of Cordova, for the first time ever that in the history of the town, they had to put in a domestic violence shelter because that comes with it, too. I mean, it is... And you're right. You're absolutely right. When people go away, the cameras go away, there is a desperation that happens. And when you are lied to by corporations or by people that are there to sort of, you know, like Exxon said, we will make you whole. You know, you are so lucky this was Exxon. That's what we were told. And the guy that said that, the guy that stood up and said that now is a real estate broker in Dallas, Texas. And you know what? I can tell you right now, I've checked. He's whole. He's fine. But, you know, I know where people are buried that weren't fine and were never made whole.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, we're going to see it in Pennsylvania, too, with all the fracking going on.
Yeah.
For natural
Absolutely.
Gas. Absolutely. There's going to be, you know, there'll be cancer clusters there. It doesn't take any great insight to understand how these things repeat and repeat and repeat again. It's like a template. You can actually apply a structure to how all of these things play out. And at some point, we have to wise up. We have to wise up and decide who is acting in the best interest of the American people and who is just trying to develop the catchiest bumper sticker. And I think with whether it's the debt ceiling or Pebble Mine or any of these other issues, we know exactly who we can kind of count on, regardless of what you think of individual parties and what their ultimate interest is. You can kind of count on one particular party for knowing what's what a little more often than the other one. And, you know, I don't need to say it, but I mean, whenever I hear contrarians say, both parties are equally guilty, and but I'm going to blame both sides. Well,
That drives me crazy.
It does drive
when I hear that. And then the thing is like, okay, they're both bought. Okay, well, you got a teachers union buying one and you got Exxon buying the other. Which one do you want?
That's right.
Fine. If you want to go down that road and say, well, everybody's bought. Yeah, that's the system we have because we don't have clean elections. Fine. Then you figure out whose tab you want to be on.
That's right. With regards to the debt negotiation, whose side do you want to be on? You want to be on the side that wants to provide affordable health care and education for every American? Or do you want to be on the side that's giving tax breaks to the wealthiest 1% and doing nothing else, by the way? Oh, yeah. Other than, you know, restricting women's rights and just defunding everything in sight from national parks to Planned Parenthood and on down the line. I mean, we know what the score is. I'm at the point of exasperation with people who think that both sides are part of the problem. Certainly, there are minor problems, I think, in relation to the Republican Party on the Democratic side. There are major issues with the Republican Party and what they're doing. And that much is obvious. It doesn't, you know, you don't have to be a scholar. You don't have to be a political junkie to understand that or to see it. You just have to have an open mind and kind of stop listening to the very easy things that are said about politics. They're all a bunch of crooks. Well, that's not entirely true, but, you know. I could
rant
about it. Yeah, I mean, I could go off about that. about the next 3 hours. the whole both sides thing is something that it completely infuriates me in so many different ways. But Shannon, thank you so much for being on the show this week. I really, really appreciate it. You want to tell people where they can find you?
Sure. They can find me on Twitter at Shannon Moore, S-H-A-N-N-Y-N-M-O-O-R-E. They can find me shannonmoore.com. I'm out there.
And if they're in Alaska, they can certainly listen to your 12 or 13 different shows.
Yes, at least 12.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. And we'll see you on Twitter.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Take care, Shannon. And that's going to do it. Next week, we're going to have an official show again with a couple of regular people doing the show. First time in a few weeks. By the way, I'm going to be on, speaking of shows, I'm going to be on, I'm going to go into the Republican snake pit in about an hour or so. I'm going to be on the John Phillips show on KABC in Los Angeles. And we're going to be talking, of course, about the debt ceiling. That should be fun. It's always fun to go on the John Phillips show. As a conservative goes, he's a smart guy. So thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. And we'll catch you next week. Take care, everybody.